Accession number 27083, wheel 79.
Do you think it's a good thing? So, Henry, my final question for you really goes in one sense to the heart of quite a major change that's taken place in the Navy in the last 10 years or whenever it was. In your day, there were never any women at sea. Now we do have women at sea. The WRENs have been abolished, I think, and have been incorporated into the main body of the Navy. Do you think it's a good thing that we have women serving right at the sharp end of one of our armed services, in the way, for example, that the Army still doesn't, the Army does not in that service, neither does the RAF, as far as I'm aware?
I feel compelled to give you a rather ambivalent answer to your question. I will make my former position absolutely crystal clear, and it was totally against the incorporation of women in the Navy, or come to that in any of the armed forces, perhaps particularly in the Army. And my reason was that, and I've discussed this with a number of very erudite consultants, doctors, about the difference between man and woman. I'm not talking of the sexual stuff, but the things that go to making a good officer or senior rating or whatever. And with their strong support, I got complete agreement that there was no problem, no variation in terms of intellectual capacity, in terms of stamina, in terms of speed of reaction, in terms of all the sort of officer-like qualities that you would pay attention to, and so forth. The question of stamina, I think, is more arguable. Physical strength, on the whole, they have not got as great physical strength, and thank goodness for it, as the men. But then the number of tasks, and I speak now of the Navy, the number of tasks that require physical strength, I'd be hard put to mention one. So nothing in it. And therefore, what's the problem? And the problem, I think, is that, and so thought, that the natural instinct of a woman, I think rather more than that of a man, is to get married. Because the woman, fortunately, I'm glad to say, medical science hasn't yet got to the point where men can have babies. So that is the prerogative of the female of the species, and it is a natural instinct on the part of a woman to wish to have babies, and that's fine, and nothing that I do or say is going to contract against that. So sooner or later, if you include them in the services, they are going to get married, and indeed I hope that they would, because it's unnatural if they don't, to an extent. And having got married, in the vast majority of cases, they're going to want to go and produce families. And then they'll be off for a period of time. And then who looks after the families? And so on and so forth. So I was really totally, strongly against it. There is the other aspect that I think there are, and whatever anybody may say, I think this is inevitable. And here I'm really pointing a finger at women in the army. I've already mentioned elsewhere that the volume of fire when you're engaging the enemy in terms of ground troops is absolutely horrendous these days, to the point that you seriously wonder, I continue to wonder, how anybody can get through it. Somehow they do. Now the army, I think I'm right in saying, they teach their people, and understandably, that if you are carrying out an assault on a position and your next in line gets cut down, even though he may be your best chum, you've got to leave him, you ignore him. Otherwise the assault will falter and you won't carry the objective. That's a perfectly valid philosophy, and I quite understand it. And I think it is just tenable in an all-male situation. But if the person next door, or next in line, happens to be a woman, and if, despite all the attempts to the contrary, you have actually fallen madly in love with that girl, whatever the army policy and instructions may be, you are going to chuck them to one side and you are going to go to the assistance of that person, that girl. And this is human nature, which ultimately tends to win. And that is what will happen. And so if it happens very much, the assault will fail. Which is why I think I'm correct in saying this. You do not find women in, shall I say, frontline units of the army. Air Force, very different, because it is much more individual to individual, and a woman's dexterity at the controls and speed of reaction and all those sort of things are every bit the equal of those of a man. And the Navy is much closer to being like the Air Force, I think. So it is the Army, and I'm not a soldier, so I shouldn't be talking like this. However, they are in all three services, one way or another. And I can only say this, and I say it with complete sincerity. I have never served in a ship with female officers or ratings. I've had a lot to do with the Wrens, and I used to think very highly of them. I have, however, over the last 20 years or so, I have visited various ships who have been modified in terms of accommodation and so forth to take female officers and ratings. I haven't met very many female ratings, but I have a few. I have met several female officers, and I can say without any hesitation that each one individually has impressed me. Impressed me in terms of professional ability, in terms of balance, because she was probably the only officer in a frigate's warden of 18 or 20. Not all that easy. Held her own, but wasn't overholding her own, wasn't saying, you know, you're different and I'm better than all you male thugs, and so forth. Not like that at all. Fully integrated and very impressive. Where I think the problem lies is this business of going off and having a family, which inevitably causes drafting, appointing problems, and produces a career hiccup. And then there is the business, of course, that if with those hiccups, and there will, I think, inevitably be, and I rather hope it continues that way, because I think it is short of natural for it to go any other way, that once a woman has had a child, she has a different approach to life. And the approach, quite rightly, tends to concentrate on the child. And so many women who have done brilliantly in the industrial, the commercial, the business world generally, and so forth, they somehow mastered this problem. They haven't all been married, and so on. And I think in the case of a service woman, that you get a higher loss rate through that perfectly commendable reasoning than in the case of men. In parenthesis, what happens now if men get God knows how long paternal something or other leave of absence is another matter. But that's politics. That's not service requirements. I think I've got to drop it there. But there will come a problem, and I can predict with foreboding that sooner or later we shall get a wet defense secretary who will say, isn't it about time we had a woman as First Sea Lord? Need I go on?
Sir Henry, thank you. You've indicated that your former position was totally against women in the Navy or other services. And you have explained how this psychologist or psychiatrist presented these other contrary arguments. Can I just put a very short string of points to you, mm-hmm. and ask for one final comment, and then we can finish. Is it not the case that whenever you put men and women together, and especially in fairly stressful circumstances, which being confined on board ship certainly is, mock warlike or even from time to time genuine war situations, that you have relationship problems, you have sexual tensions and things like this, which you're simply introducing into a ship's company which don't need to be there? So that's point one. Would you not agree that women are more, by their fundamental instincts, and you have touched on this in the question of children, when they have had children, that they are basically nurturers and not fighters, not warriors? I would ask, what is going to be the public reaction to when an Exocet missile hits a new ship one day, as it surely will do, and the public see badly wounded and maimed women by the dozen coming off this? There is, for some reason in our society, and it's built into who we are as a species, a different response to seeing men damaged, killed, than there is to women. It just is part of the way we are. And my last point really is that, and it goes back to your question about stamina and physical strength, women are undoubtedly have about half the physical upper body strength, certainly of men. And notwithstanding all the magnificent machinery and so on that ships have, when it breaks down, which it does when it's hit by a missile, you have to resort to brute force and invariably to get things done, to hack through bulkheads or to do whatever it is that you need to do as a result of the missile having badly damaged your ship. And you want as many, let's put it this way, do you want as many 15-stone able seamen wielding pickaxes or whatever, or 9-stone, but also but otherwise perfectly adequate able sea women? So those are the questions that I'd like to...
Right. I'm afraid I've mislaid the first one. Could you just repeat the first one?
Yes, the first one related to is it wise to introduce into a ship's company sexual tensions and the fact that there will always be relationships, no matter how much you say you're not allowed to have relationships, no touching rule and all the rest of it, it will happen. That's my first point.
I've got it. Right. Let me take them seriatim. On the first one, I've declared my hand that I was, and read it very strongly, against the introduction of women. In each of the ships that I have visited, I've already explained, I've been very impressed by the women that are in, certainly the Navy. And I think this goes for all three services. Against that, well, not against it, but to bolster that, is the fact that things have changed since my time, and they are in. Whether you like it or not, they are in. They are integrated to a very considerable extent into all three of the services. The question of sexual relations, for want of a better term, is not a problem. The number of cases, and there have been some, but no way more, indeed I think, but I haven't got statistics at my fingertips, I think probably the statistics would show less than in the bad old days when there was an element and certainly a risk of buggery on the lower deck. And not always in the lower deck either. I can only tell you this, that of the various ships that I have visited since I pulled out of active service, and of the quite considerable number of commanding officers that I have talked to about precisely this subject, those that have experience of ships with women compared with those that have not have said that they had their doubts, wondered what they were in for and all that sort of thing, and were in absolutely no doubt that the ships which had women embarked were somehow more rounded, more content, more efficient, which stems from these attributes, than those without them. Now that's a very high commendation, and I'm prepared to accept it, and not least, biased, if you like, by the fact that they're in, and I don't think you can put the clock back, I not only accept it, but I'm in favour of it. I will take your other points.
Certainly. I gather from that you wouldn't now wish to put the clock back.
No, I don't think I would. Because I put faith in those commanding officers' opinions. They're subjective, but they're subjective based on practical experience.
Yes. Yes.
And that is what, to a man, without exception, they've said. And that is backed by, and this is only an impression, as I say, that they're a very good lot. They are in pretty minor numbers compared with the men. And whether it is that we've, as it were, skimmed the cream, I don't know. Time will tell. I think there will be problems, men administrative. What is going to happen when some fool says, why don't we have Mrs. Snodgrass as First Sea Lord? But maybe I've got that wrong, and maybe she'd make a better First Sea Lord. I haven't actually stretched my mental acuity that far. You mentioned the business of when things get really tight and so forth, that men are, I think you used the term, born fighters and women are not. I don't think that the sort of jobs that women would, the sort of duties they would carry out, and here I'm talking Navy, I won't quote other services, though I think the Air Force comes a bit, is about on a par. I think they're every whit as capable of being staunch fighters as men. I think that the response in action is the point I made earlier, that whatever you say about it, if you're surrounded by a lot of slaughtered men and two slaughtered women, it will be human nature, and quite right too, and I wouldn't wish to change it, they will go to the aid of the two women. And I don't think there's anything, any rules, any customs, any tradition that may get built up is ever going to change that. And I hope to God it doesn't. And in terms of brute force, well, I really mentioned that earlier on, I think. The number of occasions. Yes, you can say that when a ship has been badly damaged and you've got to shore up bulkheads and so on. And there is a considerable call on plain, straight, brute strength. There will continue to be so. But bear in mind that the proportion of women, and here again I wouldn't like to quote a figure, in any modern ship's company that is carrying women as well as men, the proportion is, I doubt if it's even 20%. So I don't think that's really a problem. And by the time you get to that stage, of course, you go back to the all eggs in one basket, which is the enforced, inevitable policy forced on us today by lack of backup and redundancy and so forth, begins to apply, and the ship is probably right off for the rest of that particular action anyway. So I'm overall, if I have to place my bets, I'm pro, though I have to admit, tempered by the fact that they are in and of the excellent ones I've seen.
Well, Sir Henry, I think that is a good point for us to finish. You've ended on a note which I think is very much in keeping with, from what I can see, is the way that you address everything that you've ever addressed, which is that I believe that you have a natural wish to see the best in people, and so often you've referred to people as being ships, companies you've served with, people you've met as being generally excellent with only the odd bad hat, which is only to your permanent credit, if I may say so. Can I finally then just end by thanking you for this extraordinary contribution which you've made to the Sound Archive. I can't do more than say thank you very, very much indeed.
Well, thank you for your patience, too, and for keeping me on the rails. And I wish you luck.
Thank you. It was extremely invigorating and interesting and informative at all times.